Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, again coming to you from the Upward Sports Studio. But way back in episodes 13 and 14 of the podcast, several years ago, we had a guy in the studio who talked about his plant-based diet. He talked about what to eat, why he eats it, and encouraged all of us to try to make healthier choices with our food. Well, I've heard from many people who say their lives have been changed by this very discussion. And I am way different myself as a result of that discussion that I had that day. So I have been working towards getting Spider back to answer general nutrition questions. But in the meantime, we had him in the studio to record our 5K Challenge Week 4 video about injuries. Well, we couldn't use all the information that he and I talked about because we had to cut it down to make it short enough for that particular video. But we didn't want to waste the information that he brought to us. So I thought it would be a good idea to release it as a separate podcast. So that's what we're doing. We can never hear too much about how to deal with injuries because we all know that it's not if you're going to get injured, it's when you're going to get injured when we talk about running or any exercise, frankly, but particularly with running or walking. So we hope those incidences are very minor, and we're hoping that the information that Spider presents to us today makes it as minimal as possible, just based on how he talks about dealing with those particular injuries and not only dealing with them, but preventing them. So welcome back, Dr. John Spider Sillery, to talk about injuries. Well, Spider, welcome to the Upward Studio. And last time you were with us, we were in a radio studio, weren't we?
Yes, we were.
Yeah, but we're thank you for coming and appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So as we've already mentioned, Spider is an emergency room doctor, right?
Yes.
So why emergency room doctor?
Well, when I was in medical school, we went through different rotations. And actually, the reason why I went to medical school is to try to be a sports medicine doc.
Yeah.
And there are several avenues to do that. You can do pediatrics and then a fellowship in sports medicine. Internal medicine, family medicine, physical medicine and rehabilitation, or orthopedic surgery, and do that fellowship. And emergency medicine is one of those as well. So we go through different rotations in medical school and to see what we like. Some people already know before they go in which avenue they wanted to go into. But I was open to many things. And when I went to my ER rotation, the time just went by quickly.
Yeah.
It was interesting. There were so many different things. You can do procedures.
It's not doing the same thing over and over again.
It's not doing the same thing over, which is fine. I mean, sometimes that's great. But it was kind of between that and, I would say, orthopedics. But when I got into my orthopedic rotation, we were in a surgery for 7 hours. We're kind of rebuilding this guy's elbow. He had shattered it. And it was a young kid, and his elbow started growing back quickly. He had some blisters over it, so you can't do the surgery right away. And then once the blisters were healed, then we tried to do it. We had to re-break the bone because it wasn't grown back correctly, and then put it back into place. And those 7 hours were
grueling
for me. I'd rather run for 7 hours than stand for 7 hours.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even that involved in the surgery. You know, I was in medical school. The surgeon was doing it and the resident was helping out. And I was kind of like, oh, here, hold this tool, hand me this, you know.
And that pointed you right back toward emergencies.
Yeah, it did. And when I got done with my emergency medicine residency. It was one year of internal, one year of transitional rotating internships. So we get a bunch of different things, and then 3 years of emergency medicine. I was just, I started med school older, and I just wanted to be done.
Yeah.
So I've thought about going back at times to do that sports medicine fellowship, and they actually have one at Erlanger now. So
oh wow,
maybe in the future I'll get there.
Well, we're here today to talk about injuries and injury prevention. You know, running is it's a strenuous endeavor. Of course, it's something that puts a lot of stress on our body, and so anytime we do anything that's going to put a lot of stress on our body, we're going to open ourselves up for injury. And with running, what we like to say is it's not if, it's when.
Yeah.
You're probably going to have at least a minor injury. Not everybody has a major injury.
Right. But hopefully not. Right.
Right.
The minor ones are enough.
So we want to talk about a few things. First, what are the injuries to look for, particularly as a newer runner? And then what can we do if we have that thing? And then what are some things maybe we can do on the front end before we have it to prevent us from getting those things? So the first thing that you have to know is, well, what's leading to these things? And one of the first things is that what we call the terrible twos, doing too much, too fast, too early, right? Whether it's too much mileage or it's too much time on your feet or it's too much
intensity.
Yeah, running too hard. All of those things can be a problem. And then, of course, too little is also a problem. If you have too little sleep, if you don't spend enough time choosing good shoes, or no stretching, you don't do any preventative things at all, too little can also be a problem. So those are some of the things that we have to work on, and we have to think about as we go forward. But one of the things that comes up often is that there's a difference between soreness and pain. A lot of times we go, we have a pretty intense effort and we get pretty sore.
Yeah.
But what's the difference between soreness and something that we would say, okay, this is pain, I need to treat this differently than I would a soreness?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think that soreness is a type of pain, but it's a type of pain that's helping us get stronger. Everybody's going to be a little different and in their responses to things, but I would say soreness usually gets better with activity and pain usually gets worse with activity. Sometimes we can have an injury and it does get better when we do something. And then when we're done, boy, does it flare up.
Yeah.
You know, or the next morning, boy, does it flare up. So it's kind of hard, but you have to base it also on what's going on around you. Was your workout really hard? Are you expecting some soreness? Or are you just doing the same things and then all of a sudden there's something different going on with you? Because, you know, if you're running 3 miles a day and, you know, for a couple of weeks or whatnot, and all of a sudden you have some type of pain, however you describe the pain, that's probably more concerning than you did a hard workout yesterday and you have this,
right,
this soreness kind of pain.
If the level of intensity didn't increase,
right,
and the amount didn't increase,
right,
then something else happened.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It could still be overuse even if you haven't changed something. But it's not likely to be soreness. So that's why you have to pay attention to what you've been doing in your own workouts.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. So how do I know when I should go seek a doctor's attention and not?
Well, first I would say anytime you're concerned,
yeah,
you know, it's reasonable to do that. If you're sore, do something lighter. But again, you may not know the difference between sore and pain. So do something lighter. And if something lighter, did a 3 mile run yesterday. Well, you're going to walk. You're going to walk a little bit today because you're feeling this type of pain, whatever it is. And if it's getting worse, even with that light stuff, or then that certainly is a problem.
And a time to go see the doctor.
And a time
sure
to go
then.
See the doctor. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, as a doctor, I see people in the emergency department that I think, Why'd you come into the emergency department?
Yeah.
You know, you've had this shoulder pain for 7 months. One, for them, sometimes it's lack of care, lack of opportunity to see someone, maybe lack of insurance or whatnot. But that person doesn't know. They don't know any better. They don't know. So they're seeking someone, and that's what you should do. If you don't know, you should seek someone. They have, a lot of times orthopedic clinics will have walk-in clinics. So you not don't necessarily have to call the office and get an appointment scheduled. You can just go to a walk-in clinic.
Yeah.
And they can see you.
Yeah.
And help you figure out what it is. Because the sooner you figure out what it is, the sooner you're going to get that cared for, and the sooner you're going to be back to your goals of reaching that activity level.
Yeah, my experience a lot of times with going to the doctor is it's not necessarily that the doctor fixes the problem, but puts you on the path to fixing the problem.
Right.
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 Yeah. Well, there are some general ways to kind of prevent injuries from and that might hinder your progress or other things. And so I just wanted to kind of hit those really quickly. One of them is running surface. Obviously, running on softer running surface is better on your body, right? So
yes.
What is your opinion on running surfaces and what we should do?
I would say concrete's definitely the hardest, and then blacktop's a little less than that. And then, you know, and then you have your different types of your hard packed dirt, your cinder, your, you know, your track surface, your wood chip surface. You know, all those things are going to be less impactful. I mean, think about it. If you take a ball and you throw a ball on a cement surface,
yeah,
how high is that ball going to bounce? And if you take that ball and you throw the same effort on the ground with grass or the dirt trail or whatever, that ball is not going to bounce as high.
That makes sense.
And that's the same thing. That's the level of impact.
Yeah.
You know, that each footstep we have.
Yeah.
When we're running is going to create. So less impact on our body is going to be less injuries.
Yeah.
And it's going to be easier for us to recover from. So I hit the road sometimes, mostly hit the road to get to the trail.
Yeah. And of course, I'm exclusively on the road almost. I did make a New Year's resolution last year to run at least one day a week on trails. And so one day a week, I get on a trail somewhere.
That's good. It's progress.
But, you know, the other side of trails, though, is that there's also roots and things on trails.
Yeah.
That's why I don't run on trails, is because I find myself on the ground too often if I run on trails.
Oh, yeah.
But the more you do it, the better you get at that.
There's those that have fallen and those that will, right? I fall all the time. Fall all the time.
Well, what about shoes? Shoes are obviously important too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think the important thing with shoes is you need to go get properly fitted. Yep. You know, some people are pronators, means their forefoot rolls in. Some people are supinators, that means their foot rolls out. And some people are more neutral runners. Most people are pronators. Some people are actually over pronators. So you can, if you watch them walk or run, you can see their ankle like just going inward and their foot kind of crawling, kind of crushing inward. There are different shoes for those different kinds of runners. There's not a whole lot of supinators. So supinators typically wear neutral shoes, cushion shoes, and pronators need to wear shoes that have a little more support to help them not crush inward so much. So going to a local running store, usually a local running store is going to have people that understand the biomechanics of the foot and the use of the running shoe.
And we went through shoes a couple of weeks ago, but they say that shoes should be replaced every 300 to 500 miles. Do you agree with that? Do you think that's too much?
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
That's about right.
But you also need to look at the wear of your own shoes.
Yeah.
So that's a good general ballpark, 300 to 500 miles. Certainly no more than 6 months if you have been wearing them and you're not at that 300 to 500 mile range, that's another thing. But again, look at the wear of the shoe. Sometimes the midsole is crushed. That's what I think you need to focus on more than the outsole, because sometimes those outsoles last longer. For me, I actually skid my heel a little bit. so my outsole wears out before the midsole ever does.
That's the way mine is too. Yeah. What about biomechanics? You know, it's not easy to change your running form, but is it worth the effort to focus on your biomechanics, or is that just something that we're just kind of, it's innate, it's built into us, it's what we do? Or what's your thoughts on trying to, and how many injuries do you think are related to biomechanics?
Oh, I think many injuries are related to biomechanics, and it's obviously, it's a source of the injury itself, not necessarily the only reason, but it's part of the cause of almost all of these injuries. But biomechanics are definitely important. My belief on running form is that you just do some drills and your form should naturally change by doing those drills properly.
Yeah.
Don't think about, oh, I need to be stepping here, I need to be doing this. Let that be for when you're doing those drills.
Yeah.
And the other thing with biomechanics is, you know, sometimes people need orthotics because maybe they have a leg length difference.
Yeah.
Also muscle weaknesses. Your glute is weak on one side or both sides, and then that changes your biomechanics. So it's not just the body structure itself. It's also like the bones, but it's also the muscles and how they respond to the activity and whether they're strong enough on one side or the other.
That makes sense. So definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yep.
Stretching, you know, there's a lot of controversy over stretching and what kind of stretching we should use, shouldn't use, and all that. But how important do you think stretching is to injury prevention?
I think it's pretty important. That is definitely one of the things that I'm guilty of being not as good at.
Me too.
I mean, we can only do so many things in a day. And unfortunately, sometimes I just walk out the door and go from a run and walk back in and get back to the next task. And so I can see for all our listeners and viewers, I can see that becomes a problem. Same with strength training. Sometimes it's difficult to put things in, but it is important to do those things. And I think they can absolutely affect
don't you think that's probably
injuries.
Those things are probably more important for those people who seem to be more injury prone. Probably for them, it becomes more critical.
Yes.
Than somebody who's not
yes.
as much. Yeah. And then returning from injury. I know you're a big proponent of pool running.
Yes.
We've talked about that before. And if you don't know what that is, that's basically getting in a pool and having some kind of a flotation device around your waist and actually doing running motions in the water.
Yes. In the deep end.
in the deep end. And it's an interesting thing to do. I've only done it a couple of times in my whole life, but
I've done it so many times.
I know you
so you've many done it a times. Lot.
But how do we return from injury? What do you think are the guidelines on returning from injury?
Listening to your body and definitely going slow, you know. When I was in college, between my junior and senior year, between my freshman and sophomore year, I had 1,098 miles. Like, I just put in the miles between the end of track and the beginning of cross country. And the next year, not quite that many, but I had a lot. And then between my junior and senior year, this is the step up. I'm getting ready to be a senior, you know. My goal is to be an All-American in cross country. And I got injured, and I had to aqua jog. And I aqua jogged up until 1 week before camp.
Wow.
And I started with 1 mile.
Yeah.
You know, and at that point, my largest mile week was 108 miles.
Wow.
But so 1 mile, it doesn't seem like much.
Yeah.
But when all you're doing is not, you know, your body's not used to that.
Yeah.
Doing more than that can actually set you back further.
Yeah.
So I'd rather be slow and be good at the end of the season than try to be fast and be good at the beginning of the season and then get injured and then the whole rest of the season shot.
So you're better off erring on the side of caution.
Absolutely.
Is the bottom line. Huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, let's go through these. We're going to talk about the top injuries for runners. And this is, yeah, just statistically, these are the injuries that are seen more in runners than any other runners and any other injuries. So obviously we won't cover every possible injury, not by a long shot, but these are the most important. And so we'll start off with runner's knee, because in my estimation, from everything I've seen, that is probably the number one thing that I see, is runner's knee. So what is runner's knee? And why do we get runner's knee?
Well, runner's knee is like an irritation underneath the kneecap, or the patella, right? And sometimes that irritation creates inflammation, creates pain. It's usually due to overuse, muscle imbalance, and runner's knee is going to be hurt worse when the more you bend, the hill running or squatting. You know, if you're bending down to pick up something and underneath your knee hurts, stair walking.
Yeah.
You know, these things are going to be, lead you to consider this as a problem that you're having, you know, and obviously the more you do, the more it's going to hurt.
And it hurts like right in the, if you put your finger on your knee, that little soft spot right up under your kneecap, that's where it hurts, right?
It can also hurt right underneath it.
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of feel it underneath there.
Yeah, yeah.
But definitely anywhere just below, just above, usually just below or right underneath the kneecap.
So that just comes from overuse, basically.
Basically, yeah, overuse and irritation of the cartilage. You know, sometimes you have a tracking problem. Your knee should be in line with the tibia and the femur in a certain way, and so it should glide evenly. And sometimes if you have a tracking problem, like one muscle is tighter than the other, kind of pulling it to one side, then it's going to track and it's going to irritate that cartilage underneath. So overuse and muscle imbalance is definitely the issues.
So what do you think about the runner's knee straps that you put around your knee to prevent, like if you've got runner's knee, you can put that strap around your knee. And sometimes they do wonders. I mean, sometimes it can go from, it hurts so bad I can't run, to I can barely feel it.
Yeah.
It's one of those. But
I mean, they're definitely benefit. But again, do you want to keep, I call it nickel and diming. That's what my cross country coach and father figure said. He would call it nickel and diming. Yeah. You know, do you want a nickel and dime an injury all season long, or do you want to get it done so you can get back to your goals?
Yeah. Okay. So what can we do to prevent it?
A lot of these injuries are going to be the same thing. Rest, ice, compression, elevation. But in this particular one, you know, orthotics can be an option, because a lot of people are over pronators. I talked about that before. That's the rolling in. You know, maybe you need an orthotic, and that can help create a problem. Maybe you have that muscle imbalance. Maybe you have a leg length difference. And those things can all contribute to you actually developing it to begin with. Obviously, when we're talking about muscle imbalances and runner's knee, you need to worry about the abductors, the abductors. So the glutes, the tensor fascia lata, those muscles are most important in this injury. So to keep your leg from kind of crushing in as well.
Because
if those are weak, then your knee kind of folds in a little bit, and that creates some more stress on the knee itself.
What I've noticed about runner's knee is that the looser you keep your quads, the less likely you are to get runner's knee. Do you agree with that?
Yes, that's...
A lot of times your quads seem to pull on your kneecap in some way that causes more tension in there and causes the... So I always tell somebody, if you got runner's knee, as soon as you start to feel any tenderness in there at all, stretch those quads like crazy.
Yeah, and you also have the quadricep tendon that can be tight, or the patellar tendon that can, you know, you can develop a patellar tendinopathy as well. And so anytime you stretch those quads, it's going to help out things regardless of what the injury is around the knee.
Yeah.
Some other things we can do is it's called platelet-rich plasma, a PRP injection.
That's kind of a last resort thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of the later things. Some insurances don't cover it. I've had a PRP myself, but it wasn't for runner's knee. It was for a meniscal tear.
Yeah.
And it worked well for me.
I've seen it work wonders for a lot of people.
Yeah, and then a few years later, I had it again. So,
wow.
But it lasted a few years, and I didn't really have any problem afterwards. So,
yeah.
it's one of the newer therapies that the orthopedics are using. So,
well, let's move on to Achilles tendonitis. That you know, your Achilles takes it's so much pressure on your Achilles with each step that you run. Your calf muscles are attached to the bottom of your foot, basically, by this Achilles tendon, that you put too much pressure on it, and eventually those fibers start to pull away from the heel, and it causes Achilles tendonitis. So, again, is this just an overuse thing? Is this a lack of stretching thing? What causes it to happen?
Well, we've kind of defined sort of what it is with what you were saying, but it's now called tendinopathy. Because sometimes it's not inflammatory based, at least it can be without inflammation.
Which is what the itis is, so tendinopathy.
Right,
okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yep.
Okay.
So the orthopedics like to use tendinopathy now. But it can begin to swell, creating the pain. And then the hard thing is, or the thing that you think of is that it doesn't allow for proper function.
Mm-hmm.
And then it typically is chronic failure of the healing process. So you get these, like you said, kind of micro tears or whatnot sometimes, and that will not heal up well enough. Inflexibility is definitely one thing for this injury that absolutely puts you at risk. As a runner, you need a flexible Achilles tendon.
Mm-hmm.
As a swimmer, for example, you don't really need a flexible Achilles tendon. You need the front of your foot to be flexible so that you can use your feet as paddles. So a lot of swimmers will, even those that convert from swimming to running, may develop this at a higher rate because their Achilles
makes sense
is not as tight. So any sort of impact activity, running, jumping, these things are going to put more stress on the Achilles tendon, which, as you said, it connects the calf muscles, which are typically the gastrocnemius and the soleus, but some people have a plantaris and other people don't. That connects those muscles to the calcaneus or the heel.
Yeah.
And I had this not long ago, and believe me, if you don't take care of it right away, it can linger on. And then you're likely to re-injure it later, even after you come back.
Yeah.
I remember, I think I was telling you about it before when we were running. I did an 8-mile run and was completely fine. I tried to push my car that wouldn't start into a spot that was better. And me pushing it alone put some stress on my Achilles. When I went to my daughter's swim practice, I sat down for a while and then I stood up and I'm like, whoa, my Achilles is hurting. So mine was more acute, but some people's are not acute. Some people it's chronic. And it took me, you know, I took a few days off because I was like, oh, I got to take care of this right away. And then I ran 3 miles and it was fine. And then the next day I ran 3 miles again, trying not to push it, right? Because I was doing 8 and 10. And and then it was just sore. I should have stopped. I didn't stop. I was running with someone else, and I kind of, it was an easy run, but And a year and a half later, I was finally back to doing it, and then about 6 months after that, I was lifting up something, you know, moving some furniture, and it activated again. And about another year and a half, you know, I had to put a boot on. And that's certainly one of the things that you can use to treat it. If you get it right away, you can get a boot. You can get them on Amazon. Don't get a short boot though, because short boots are only good for foot injuries. And this counts as an ankle injury because it does cross that ankle joint. So a tall boot prevents the flexion and extension of the Achilles tendon. So that's what I kind of had to do for it to get it better. And then again, start slow and progress. I mean, I was doing a half mile.
Stay off the hills.
Yeah.
While you're having issues.
Yep. I mean, even cycling was even a problem.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, take the pounding off and, you know, sometimes I'd go an aqua jog, but sometimes that would even bother it. So,
yeah, that's one of the things about injuries in general that everybody needs to keep in mind is it doesn't mean you have to stop being active when you have an injury. There are usually other things you can do to keep yourself kind of in shape and fit.
Yeah.
During that time when you're having to heal up and can't run. What about shin splints? Everybody's heard of shin splints, but I think they're one of the most misunderstood things. So what are shin splints and why do we get them?
Well, shin splints are like micro tears of the tendons that attach to the medial part of the shin, the tibia. And that creates inflammation and pain. The pain is usually dull. It's basically a repetitive stress injury. Again, can be biomechanical, can be twos, you know, the too much too soon.
Yep.
Or you're adding too much distance with too much speed.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it occurs in more flat-footed people. But it is those micro tears creating inflammation and pain. It's very hard to distinguish sometimes between shin splints and stress fractures.
Yeah.
So you really kind of need to be cautious because if it's a stress fracture, you absolutely cannot be weight bearing.
You got to stop.
Yeah. And stress fractures are going to be micro tears of the bone that can be in the shin in that same area. So it's hard sometimes to figure out which one of those it is.
Yeah, and this is always the beginning of track season, high school track season. There's always, within 2 weeks, there's a half a dozen kids that have shin splints because they tried to do too much, too fast, because they came into track season, they weren't in shape, and all of a sudden they're trying to whip themselves into shape really quickly. So this is why when we do the 5K challenge, we talk about not doing, even though you feel good, you think I can do more, and you probably can do more. But this is one of those injuries that you can get because you feel fine and you feel like you can do more. And so you do more. And then the next thing you know,
you pay the price.
Yes.
Yeah.
And shin splints are not that easy to get rid of once you get them.
Yeah.
One of the other things that athletic trainer told me one time was that there's a connection to shin splints and really tight calves, that tight calves will cause some pulling of the muscle away and that causes some of those micro tears. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Okay. Same with the Achilles, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got, and actually plantar fasciitis too. Plantar fasciitis is actually more of a calf problem and they use a lot of activities to strengthen and loosen up the calf to help with that. So all of those things, I mean, those calf muscles and the lower leg muscles,
you can't stretch them too much, can you?
You can stretch. Overstretch them.
You can overstretch them by stretching them too hard,
right?
But not stretching them too often,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime when we'll talk about stretches next week, but anytime you're talking about stretching, you don't want to get to a point where it hurts when
That's
you stretch.
Right. Yeah, a light stretch that you can, you know, feel comfortable holding for a period of time. I mean, sometimes you do short lengths of stretching. And like you said, you'll go over that next week. But other times you hold the stretch for a longer period of time, 90 seconds.
Yeah. So for a distance runner, we have the 10% rule. Don't increase mileage more than 10% from 1 week to the next. That will help with this, with the idea of shin splints, wouldn't it? If
Absolutely.
Everybody adhered to that.
Absolutely. Kind of related, but not specifically shin splints. My daughter, she's on the swim team, and she started lifting weights. She went to one of the practices where they started lifting. It was easy for her.
Yeah.
And then the next day came,
Oh.
And she did not go to swim practice because she was hurting so bad.
Yeah.
But yet the workout was easy.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about with this. And it took her a couple days to recover. The same thing. Don't do too much, even though it feels good. Stick with your plan. You know, you can later on, you can think about and maybe adjust your plan a little bit if things are going very well, but don't go wild and
yeah,
and do too much too soon.
Very good. Plantar fasciitis. Man, oh man, I've had plantar fasciitis. I had it for almost a year at one point. Took me forever to get rid of it. I finally found a stretch that would get rid of it. There's about 1,200 different things you can do for plantar fasciitis. But what is plantar fasciitis?
Well, anytime you say fasciitis, right, it's the itis part is inflammation. So it can be an acute problem, but it also can be kind of a chronic degenerative problem from little micro tears. Again, micro tears in the plantar fascia. The plantar fascia is located underneath the foot, kind of in the arch of the foot. It connects the heel or the calcaneus to the forefoot, excuse me, under the toes. And it's a connective tissue bundle, really, kind of just thick tissue there. And you get micro tears in there, and then they try to heal, and that can create a problem. So you really need to try to stretch that. You can do a massage ball underneath your foot, even a golf ball or a racquetball is probably better than a golf ball just because it gives you a little more surface area. But any of these things, and you can kind of roll with ice. But it's the most common reason for foot pain in runners.
Yeah.
Bottom of the heel foot pain in runners. So,
and plantar fasciitis can be up under the ball of the foot, but it's most of the time in the heel where you feel it, right?
Yeah, most of the time you feel it back towards the back of the heel. Sometimes you feel it all the way.
Yeah.
And you'll typically feel it worse when you haven't. Like, you wake up and you step that foot down, you're going to feel that plantar fascia. And then you're going to know at that point, this is a problem.
Yep.
Because it's one that can get loose feeling when you're running. So it starts out and it hurts a lot, and then you get more active, or even as the day goes along, just going about your daily business.
Yeah.
It can feel better a little bit, but then once you stop and then you restart,
yeah,
it's a lot worse.
Yeah. Well, now I've had this before, and so there's three things that I do. Tell me if I'm doing a good job, doctor. So one of the things you mentioned was rolling.
Yep.
You know, I've got a foot roller that I roll under my foot, and I try to do that at least once a week. And then I have, I keep my calves stretched. Even when I stretch my calves no matter what, whether I'm running or not running, I'm going to make sure I stretch my calves. And then what was the third thing? Oh, this is something I discovered on my own, was when I wake up in the morning, I stretch my calves. I just I don't do anything major, but I pull my toes back toward myself, not physically pull them, but just angle my foot back as far as I can and try to stretch my calves and feet before I ever get out of bed every morning. And that's something I always do.
That's great.
Seems to help.
Have you ever seen a dog get up from a nap?
Yeah.
Yep. Do you watch what the dog does?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The dog does stretches.
That's right.
Before he gets up and moves around.
Yep.
Or she, right? Depends on the...
Cats do it too.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that is a very intuitive thing for us to do.
Yep.
But we don't do it.
Yep.
Because we wake up and we get started. But you doing that is important. And sometimes I'll get up and I'll do some rotations with my back or cat-cow kind of thing to
yeah,
get the body moving before you start putting weight on it.
That's good stuff. How about IT band syndrome? So I had a doctor tell me that there is no such thing as tightness in your IT band. That if you have IT band syndrome, it's because there's a misalignment, and the misalignment is causing the tightness because the IT band doesn't move. Is that true? Is that accurate? Or is that a little...
I don't agree with that.
Okay. Well, tell me what IT band syndrome is.
So first we got to figure out what is the IT band, iliotibial yeah. band. So it connects, again, it's a like a fibrous tissue. It connects like the tensor fascia lata down to underneath the knee.
So your hip to your knee.
Yeah, hip to knee. The ilium, ilio, right? Ilio, mm-hmm. ilium is in your pelvis. So it connects the pelvis to iliotibial, so tibia. It connects your pelvis to your tibia. Mm-hmm. And it, in some people, it's short, the IT band itself, and some people it's longer. I've had IT band syndrome multiple times. I think a lot of it is as a runner or even a cyclist, we are straightforward. We don't do a whole lot of lateral motions. Yes. Do we turn a corner? Sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're not doing a whole lot of side-to-side things. And I think that the IT band itself or the tensor fascia lata, the muscles that connect, can get tight. It can also be a problem with glute weakness. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about how muscle imbalance plays a role. Mm-hmm. It can also be kind of a biomechanical problem. I got it when I was running a lot because I would always run against traffic, which you should run, right? So you right. can see the cars coming. But then you're on a slope. If there's no sidewalk, you're on the slope of the road. And so biomechanically, the road has changed your biomechanics. Mm-hmm. And so you put the stresses on things differently. And so I guess that's what it is. And that's some of the kind of the reasons for it. But yeah, it is a stabilizer. It yeah. stabilizes so you don't just fall over.
Yeah. I had an athletic trainer tell me that one time that this was a very, very extreme case. Don't think this is something that happens very often, but this is a very extreme case that they had an athlete who just couldn't get over it, and they eventually cut his IT band out. And that your body can function without it. It's obviously not ideal, but that isn't that crazy?
Don't remove anything that your body has in it if you can help it. sure. Do you need surgery sometimes? Yeah. Surgery is one of the treatments, but you know, everything, less aggressive, so to speak, yes. less invasive. That's the word I was looking for. Less invasive, the better, you know, foam rolling, doing lateral movements. I used to do slides. I was on this like slick surface and I'd have these like shoe covers and I could slide back and forth.
That's good.
You know, or even like a grapevine drill. For mm. running, yeah. you know, it's going to get you some of that. Or when I trail run, there's a lot of turns.
Yeah,
you know, so varying the surface that we talked about before, getting massage, you know, some deep tissue massage, and sometimes it hurts.
Yeah,
you know, getting the elbow or forearm from the massage therapist along that IT band, cross fiber friction massage, as well.
Yeah,
I've had a steroid injection. It was. A long time ago, I want to say 96, I think I was on my way to Italy for world championships in duathlon, run, bike, run. And man, I ran 2 miles that morning that I went to see the orthopedic and I was crying on the ground. It mm-hmm. hurt so bad. It's like a popping, grinding kind of feel.
In your hip or your knee?
Yes.
Because it can be either one.
It can be either one. That's yeah, right. And sometimes it'll snap. It'll like snap over it, and you feel it kind of at your hip or your knee. And I had that injection, and it helped. Now they don't want to inject you with steroids if they can help it, because it weakens the tendons. But it is a treatment, and I have had that. My problem was probably, and still is, weak glutes.
Yeah,
I have to work on my glute strength, and I do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was doing some squats the other day and other activities, and strained my back about a month ago. But I'm over that now, and I'm back to running. But that's what I was trying to do to help prevent some of these injuries.
Yeah. So a lot of these things can be fixed by fixing muscle imbalances and weaknesses.
Yes, fixing muscle imbalances. Sometimes you need orthotics. I have a pair of sole support orthotics. It's a reproducible way of making orthotic. You know, they used to do like plaster and strap you, and that's not really reproducible, but the sole support was is very reproducible, and if you have a leg length difference, they'll help to figure that out, and you may, you know, need a little bit higher orthotic on one side, but the goal is to get your heel and your forefoot kind of in a line with those orthotics, so that can help. Obviously anti-inflammatory, some compression, ice. I like to tell people about taking a Dixie cup and putting water in it and freezing it, and then you tear the cup away and you're doing the ice massage with that.
That's another good thing.
I think is a good probably the best way to ice, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let's talk about ice versus heat, because I got onto somebody recently because they told me they were putting heat on an issue that to me needed ice, because there was some inflammation in that area. And so what is the difference between heat and ice, and why one and the other, or the other?
Ice is going to reduce inflammation. And so you want to use ice for something that is a newer injury.
Mm-hmm.
And heat typically is going to bring blood flow into the area. It's going to warm it up, like if we're doing a track workout, right? We're going to warm up instead of just going all out right away. So it's going to help to warm the body up. So any sort of chronic injury, you may want to consider heat before you work out and then ice afterwards, because you're going to bring in the inflammation from the workout. So ice afterwards. So that's kind of my thoughts on ice versus heat.
Good stuff. Stress fractures. You've already mentioned stress fractures. Those are they're fractures in your bones that happen. And for runners, it's typically somewhere from the waist down, obviously.
Yep.
I've had a stress fracture in my femur, which, as I understand, it's relatively rare.
Yeah.
It's most of the time it's in your lower legs, your shins, or your feet.
Yeah. Right? Metatarsals.
Yeah.
Metatarsals and mostly shins.
Yeah. Right?
Then second, I would say probably metatarsals. I've seen it in the pelvis as well.
Okay.
And like you said, you had it in the femur. It's something that you absolutely have to be non-weight bearing. The pain is going to be more sharp. It's going to be worse with activity. Those are kind of the big alarms.
And if you have a stress fracture, you need to get it diagnosed, and then you need to stop it.
Yeah. My mom was preparing for what's it called, Camino de Santiago or something. There was a trail
that
my aunt was gonna walk, and my mom went with her, and my mom was hurting just below her knee when she left, and then she came back and she's like, I had to not do some of the sections, and I had to walk, you know, walk real slow, and she was hobbling. So she came back and went to the orthopedic, and sure enough, she had a stress fracture.
Wow.
And he said if she had continued on, because she just ended up stopping and getting like a taxi or whatnot to the next stop a couple times. He said, if it doesn't heal, you'll need surgery, because the bone will compress and it will not heal well.
Yeah, it is critical. Can't stress that enough.
Yeah.
If you have a stress fracture, stop running.
Stop running. Get in the pool. That's when we were talking about aqua jogging.
That's
the way to do it, because there's no weight bearing.
Yep.
You know, and the weight bearing is going to definitely hurt it. You know, sometimes they'll put you in a boot. They'll give you crutches sometimes. But yeah, it's limited.
And let me say this, because, you know, when I had the problem with my femur, they didn't diagnose it at first. For a femur in particular, there's a lot of tissue before the bone, and so it's a little bit harder to diagnose. And so we had to have a bone scan in order to find it.
Yeah, x-rays most of the time don't pick it up. Will they do an x-ray? Absolutely, they'll do an x-ray. They'll do a bone scan or an MRI, and those are kind of the diagnostic tools of choice for them. But sometimes it's hard to figure that out, right?
Yeah.
You know, you could think you had shin splints and you've actually got a stress fracture, and you keep doing it, and it gets worse, then you need to definitely seek attention.
Yep. That's the last time I took time off, was when I had that stress fracture.
You had a long time with no time off.
13 years ago. So
13 years with no, at least, what is it? At least 1 or 2 miles?
At least a mile a day.
At least a mile a day.
At least a mile a day for the last 13 years, except one day where I missed a day. So, yeah.
That's pretty remarkable.
So are there things we can do to prevent stress fractures?
Absolutely. I think one of the most important things is vitamin D.
Yeah.
At least where we live, you know, we're not near the equator. We don't get a lot of sunlight, especially in the winter. Our vitamin D levels are not optimal or low, right?
And I've heard as much as over 90% of people are low in vitamin D.
In the United States, I would say 90% or more of people are vitamin D deficient. And that's deficient. That's not optimal. If we're looking at optimal, then we have a different story to talk about. But that's deficient. So vitamin D level is a wide range. 30 to 100 is normal range. I've seen people with a vitamin D level of 5.
Wow.
And rickets occurs somewhere around 11.
Wow.
So they didn't have rickets, but you know, vitamin D is not only important for your bones, it's also important to prevent infection. It's also decreases, you have optimal vitamin D levels, it decreases your risk for breast cancer. It actually has some pain. It works on some pain receptors. There's a bunch of different things that vitamin D does, but for what we're talking about here today, it is important for our bone health, you know, stress fractures.
So how much vitamin D? We should be taking a supplement then, is what you're saying is a good idea.
I think taking a supplement, they've done a study. I don't remember the name of the study or what year it was, but they put adults on 4,000 international units a day.
Wow.
And no one, let me restate that. One person had a problem with that level.
Wow.
No one else did. And that person had a genetic variant that had to do with the vitamin C metabolism.
Okay. So what you're saying is it's really hard to have too much vitamin D.
It is pretty hard to have too much vitamin D.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you'll start knowing you should really have a 25 hydroxy vitamin D level taken and see what it is. Many doctors don't do that. And then when they do, they're not sure how to prescribe the vitamin D because somebody will give them 1,000 units. I mean, you can give a kid, like a young kid, a toddler, you can give 1,000 units a day and it really not be a problem.
Wow.
But your goal, I would say probably wait, you know, 6 months after you start, if you get a vitamin D level, to get it retested. But the goal should be somewhere around 60. 60 to 80. 80 is good.
Yeah.
30 to 100 is normal. Sometimes on normal blood work, if your vitamin D level's high, your calcium could be too high.
Well, I was going to ask about that. Is calcium also something that, I mean, you hear that all the time. Calcium is related to bones.
Yep, so calcium is related to bones.
So we should make sure we got enough calcium as well.
Absolutely. Yep. Some of the good sources of calcium, you know, I'm a plant-based eater, so that is certainly one of the concerns. Soy-based products, beans, almonds, tahini, chia seeds, flax seeds, seaweed, dark green leafy vegetables, raspberries, blackberries. These are some of the foods that contain a high amount of
calcium.
I'm more of a proponent to try to get things from food sources first.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to, then supplement.
Right.
Like my zinc level is low. I eat a bunch of things that are high in zinc. I eat mostly like pumpkin seeds are pretty high in zinc, and I eat those. But it's still low. So I need to supplement the zinc.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Well, good. Well, last but not least, blisters. Blisters are one of those things that I always tell people, just run through them. But you do need...
Yeah.
But what about blisters, and how should we handle blisters? Because that's something we probably all have at one time or another, in one way or another.
Yeah, yeah. They can hurt. That's for sure. It depends where they are. You know, you get a blister under your foot and you're running on it the whole time, it's going to hurt. I would say, you know, the smaller blisters, leave them alone. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a big blister, then you should probably pop them, you know, clean them off. Then
what's bigger?
Continue
what's
to
big?
Check them.
Nickel size, is that big? Or quarter size is big?
Nickel size is kind of pushing it. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, quarter size is definitely big.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you'll...
Yeah.
Silver dollar pancake size.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, I was running with some people about a week ago, and I get home and I pull off my shoes and socks, and my socks full of blood.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, what's going on? I'm not hurting anywhere. I didn't step on anything. And I look at my toes. I don't see anything. And then the next day, the same thing. I look again, nothing. And the next day I see, and I'm like, oh, I'm starting to hurt a little spot. So in between my toes, I had a blister.
Oh.
And so what I do is I have this, it's called Second Skin. It's like Spanco product.
Yeah.
It's a little square, and I took the square and I put it on there. There are other kinds of blister covers. Running stores have them. You know, sometimes Walgreens, CVS, those type of stores might have them too. But I covered it up and put it on a Band-Aid and haven't had a problem since.
And then you need to find out what caused the blister. What caused that friction that caused the blister, and fix that thing. It could be the wrong socks. It could be the wrong shoe.
Yeah,
but it could
It could be you tied your shoes too tight as well, you know? Again, we're going back to some of the preventative things, right? Proper shoe fit.
Yeah.
Don't wear the shoes that are too tight. You get the blisters on the end of your toes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get them even if you got proper fit and you haven't had them before. But, you know, oftentimes I don't always wear double layer socks, but, you know, double layer socks, wicking material.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Don't want cotton socks.
Right. Those are some things that help prevent, you know, and there are some, like the smart wools.
Yeah.
I wear those a lot, and the wool is very wicking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
that's good stuff.
Yeah. And then, you know, you can also prevent it by putting some Body Glide or some other sort of petroleum-based...
If you know you have an issue with an
yeah,
area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so sometimes actually you can do loop lacing. I don't know if you know what loop lacing is. Instead of your crisscrossing your things, you start at the bottom, and you take your shoelace through, and then you make a loop to the next hole, and then you cross them, and then you make a loop through the next hole, and you do that all the way up. And that takes a lot of pressure off the top of your foot. So if the top of your foot's bothering you, that can be it, but it also helps spread the pressures out so that it can actually help prevent some blisters.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Well, Spider, I appreciate you coming and joining us and talking about these things. And hopefully that's all, well, I know that's all good information and a fresh perspective on what we can do and what these injuries are. And hopefully, like you said early, hopefully nobody has to deal with them.
Yeah.
But when you do,
hopefully
this helps.
Remember, a lot of these things, the general concept is going to be the same, and the general treatment is going to be the same. You know, prevention, slow progression that we talked about, proper shoe fit. Don't increase speed and distance at the same time. Remember to routinely decide you're going to have a rest day. Or instead of a rest day, you do a lighter activity, maybe in the water. You can do ice baths. You can do just plain icing. You can do massages, stretching, strengthening, some cross training activity like the aqua jogging or swimming or biking or foam rolling.
Yeah.
And then if you end up getting something, don't nickel and dime it. Don't take care of it right away.
Yeah.
You know, if it's just a soreness, figure that out and you'll work through that. If it's a pain, then, you know, go to that walk-in clinic and get figured out. And a lot of the treatments, again, they're going to be non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. I particularly would rather use turmeric and ginger, and sometimes omega-3s. These turmeric and ginger work on the same pathway that ibuprofen works on without the side effects. But just know that some people can't take those things. You're on blood thinners, you can't take NSAIDs, you can't take turmeric. Do the strengthening. You know, different injuries you're gonna need to strengthen up different things, and flexibility. You know, do those stretches.
Yeah,
if you can. So, some extracorporeal shockwave treatment, some physical therapy, some, you know, if you got Achilles, some eccentric. You know, do your, it's not really a calf raise because you're actually lowering. So you step up there and then you lower. What eccentric activity is it's contracting when you're stretching.
Yeah.
It sounds counterintuitive. That's what you do when you run downhill. Mm-hmm. You're actually lengthening as you contract.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you're more sore running downhill, even though it's easier to run downhill than up. And sometimes there's injections, steroids, PRP, some sclerosing agent like dextrose or stem cells can be injected. You know, various things. Sometimes you just need to be off the injury and you need to be doing something else.
Yeah.
So there's some kind of overarching things to keep in mind. Those are some important take-home points.
Very good. All right. Thanks for helping us with all this.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Maybe the craziest part about this episode is that we could have talked about these issues for three times that long, just about these particular injuries, not to mention any others that we could have talked about. But there are some really good pointers in here to hopefully help you on your journey to prevent a severity of injuries and maybe to help you get over those things much, much quicker. And I hope you have gleaned some very important information from all of this that Spider has so graciously offered to us. And I hope that your year has started off in tremendous fashion as well. May you follow the steps God has laid out for you in 2025. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.